Well, good evening, and welcome to our continuation in the Life Divine. Tonight, we're working in the 27th chapter of the Life Divine, the Sevenfold Cord of Being. I hope you will be pleased to know that in the future, the chapters will become longer and longer. This is your final, relatively short chapter. We had got to a point where Sri Aurobindo has been describing the nature of the worlds as they are presented into manifestation from that divine triplicity of Satchit Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, which organizes and pours itself out through its real, conscious manifestation through knowledge and will of its own infinity. This knowledge and will, characteristic of the real idea, is what lends reality to all the cosmos. And from that linking manifestation comes in descending order mind, life, matter, so that we have constellated seven principles of existence. But there is an eighth. If matter, in a sense, is inverted existence, sat, if life is inverted chit tapas, if mind itself is a power put forth by the supramental, the vijnana, then what represents that principle of delight in the world, except for the soul? The great world soul, yes, but each spark coming out from that sinful fire of the divine represents the principle of bliss in play in the universe. And it is through the power of this evolving consciousness represented by the soul that the entire universe wakes up to its hidden nature. So far from being something which is dispensable, the soul is indispensable to the cosmic functioning. So Sri Aurobindo has to this point described how Satchit Ananda has become all this cosmic order. And last week we left off after he had given a brilliant description of how mind represents supermind and life represents the conscious power of chit tapas or chit shakti. Now he turns to the principle of bliss, because he has to go through these many worlds that form this cord of being to set the stage for what we must do next, which is to find out how it is that we continue consciously, intentionally, this evolution which is astir in the universe. So, we'll begin. Finally, consciousness being thus omniscient and omnipotent, in entire luminous possession of itself, and such entire luminous possession being necessarily and in its very nature bliss, for it cannot be anything else. A vast, universal self-delight must be the cause, essence, and object of cosmic existence. If there were not, says the ancient seer, this all-encompassing ether of delight of existence in which we dwell, if that delight were not our ether, then none could breathe, none could live. This is a paraphrase of that brilliant passage from the Taittiriya Upanishad. It is 2.7 in the Brahmananda Valley. This self-bliss, he says, may become subconscient, seemingly lost on the surface. But not only must it be there at our roots, all existence must be essentially a seeking and reaching out to discover and possess it. And in proportion as the creature in the cosmos finds himself, whether in will and power, or in light and knowledge, or in being and wideness, or in love and joy itself, he must awaken to something of the secret ecstasy. Because if it is Satchit-Ananda, which has deployed itself, fashioned itself, taken form, empowered that form, come to wakefulness in that form, then it must have some experience of itself. And the infinite ultimately can only experience bliss. Our ignorance, our being lost, encapsulated, as it were, in a particular form, restricts us from experiencing what is happening in the cosmos at large and in being in its essence. But if we were to rediscover what we really are, that essentially we are bliss, then the walls come crashing down and we can see vista after vista, calling us through adventure, sometimes through struggle and suffering, but always arriving ultimately at that dessert, at that delight which waits for us at the end of the journey. There is a continuation in the Taittiriya Upanishad, which goes to the whole question of theodicy, describing this person who reaches. He does not agonize, thinking, why didn't I do the right thing? Why did I do the wrong thing? A man who knows this frees the self, the Atman, from these two thoughts. Indeed, a man who knows this frees himself. That is the hidden teaching. That is the Upanishad. To free yourself, to throw off the shackles of limitation, to know that you are, even in finite form, still the infinite spirit and are real. And you are conscious of your reality, and you know that what is core to you is this throb of bliss. That is the freedom we all seek, and why we've thrown ourselves into this adventure in the first place. He continues, Sri Aurobindo continues, joy of being, delight of realization by knowledge, rapture of possession by will and power or creative force, ecstasy of union and love and joy are the highest terms of expanding life because they are the essence of existence itself in its hidden roots as on its yet unseen heights. Wherever then cosmic existence manifests itself, these three must be behind and within it. Satchit-Ananda is an omnipresent reality. That is the title for the entire first part of the Life Divine, omnipresent reality. This also calls us back to the Taittiriya Upanishad. which says in chapter 2, verse 8, "He who is here in a man, and he who is there in the Son, they are one and the same." The Son is that figure of the supreme consciousness throwing itself into perfect manifestation. That is the same thing as is within your heart. At the core of your being is that brilliant Sun. To return to Sri Aurobindo's text, "But infinite existence, consciousness, and bliss need not throw themselves out into apparent being at all, or doing so, it would not be cosmic being, but simply an infinity of figures without fixed order or relation, if they did not hold or develop and bring out from themselves this fourth term of supermind, of the divine gnosis. There must be, in every cosmos, a power of knowledge and will, which out of infinite potentiality fixes determined relations, develops the result out of the seed, rolls out the mighty rhythms of cosmic law, and views and governs the worlds as their immortal and infinite seer and ruler." And he quotes from the Isha, "The seer, the thinker, he who becomes everywhere, the self-existent. This power indeed is nothing else than Satchit Ananda himself. It creates nothing which is not in its own self-existence. And for that reason, all cosmic law, pardon me, and for that reason, all cosmic and real law is a thing not imposed from outside, but from within. All development is self-development. All seed and result are seed of a truth of things, and result of that seed determined out of its potentialities." So, Satchit Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, through Ritta Chit, through the truth conscious nature, which is its own self-existent being, establishes a cosmos through the exercise of its knowledge will. Knowledge will is a function of this supramental consciousness. And it takes what is illimitable and limits it, constructs a coherence out of what is sheer infinity, so that the infinite may make itself finite. Why? To play, to enjoy, to manifest, to express. Note that he says it is Satchit Ananda himself. I come back to this point, I know, frequently, but it's worth making. The term Satchit Ananda is roughly 1,000 years old. It comes out of Vedantic bhakti tradition, where it conceives of a conscious being whose nature is delight. This is not simply raw existence. This is an existent, aware of itself, himself, herself, and experiencing within her own being sheer delight. Its law of development is real because it is real. What it throws into form has necessarily truth and order and power behind it. He continues, "For the same reason, no law is absolute, because only the infinite is absolute, and everything contains within itself endless potentialities quite beyond its determined form and course, which are only determined through a self-limitation by idea proceeding from an infinite liberty within. So it restricts itself. And this also is true of us. We should not ever mistake this limited facade as all that we are. We must recognize, ultimately, that we are the infinite stationed in the finite. This should not swell our ego. This should confirm the nature of the soul and impart to you the confidence to move forward and grapple with the machinery of nature and bring consciousness into it, bring divinity into it, and succeed in the farthest throw of evolution. He continues, this power of self-limitation is necessarily inherent in the boundless all-existent. And if it's true above, it must be true here too. It must be true of you and every other person too. The infinite would not be the infinite if it could not assume a manifold finiteness. The absolute would not be the absolute if it were denied in knowledge and power and will and manifestation of being a boundless capacity of self-determination. You can be what you determine yourself to be. The divine is proving that because it is doing it on a cosmic scale. And what it imparts to the cosmos, it imparts also to the individual. You are a microcosm working within a larger context. But what you can do, the cosmos can do. And what the cosmos can do, you too can accomplish. This supermind, then, is the truth or real idea inherent in all cosmic force and existence, which is necessary itself remaining infinite to determine and combine and uphold relation and order and the great lines of the manifestation. So not only are we individually true, but there is a right relation possible, a harmonious order that we can discover and install in our actual life, in our conduct of self-growing in the larger universe, of how self moves in society, how society represents, in societal terms, what the cosmos intends. So a many-ordered harmony is possible, that great chord of being. All the notes sounded at once gives the sense of this entire harmony. In the language of the Vedic rishis, as infinite existence, consciousness, and bliss are the three highest and hidden names of the nameless, so this supermind is the fourth name, fourth to that in its descent, fourth to us in our ascension. Turiyam Svid, a certain fourth, also called Turiyam Dhamma, the fourth placing or poise of existence. And we remember the earlier Vedic citation on that. So if the nameless, if the unknowable, presents itself positively as Satchit-Ananda, so that we can understand that positive being is always aware and always blissful. Through the supramental, this station of the fourth, it comes into manifestation. That to us is a linking and bridging plane of being. It is the route by which we descend into the cosmos, into matter, life, and mind. It is the bridge that leads us back to light as we evolve and leave the mind and become supramental. We gain access to all the spheres, all the powers, all the experiences of that divine consciousness. He continues, but mind, life, and matter, the lower trilogy, are also indispensable to all cosmic being, not necessarily in the form or with the action and conditions which we know upon earth or in this material universe, but in some kind of action, however luminous, however puissant, however subtle. For mind is essentially that faculty of supermind which measures and limits, which fixes a particular center and views from that the cosmic movement and its interactions. So he's described again the nature of the mind. Of course, he's described it earlier in this very chapter and used this same language throughout the development of the life divine, trying to show that mind is that thing which takes diverse standpoints, lives in that diversity, locks away from itself the enormity, the absolute unity, which is the secret reality, so that it can function within measures and limits. It is not unintentional. It is not a cosmic accident. It is the nature of mind to so separate itself, because in this way it serves the supramental purpose. Granted, he says, that in a particular world, plane, or cosmic arrangement, mind need not be limited, or rather, that the being who uses mind as a subordinate faculty need not be incapable of seeing things from other centers or standpoints, or even from the real center of all, or in the vastness of a universal self-diffusion. Still, if he is not capable of fixing himself normally in his own firm standpoint for certain purposes of the divine activity, if there is only the universal self-diffusion or only infinite centers without some determining or freely limiting action for each, then there is no cosmos, but only a being musing within himself infinitely, as a creator or poet may muse freely, not plastically, before he proceeds to the determining work of creation. In other words, it allows us to create, to fashion, to form. He writes here, not plastically, from the Greek plastikos, plasein, to mold. So it means by molding, by shaping, we're throwing ideas into form, a necessary thing to do. Such a state must exist somewhere in the infinite scale of existence, but it is not what we understand by a cosmos. In other words, conceptively, the divine, before manifestation, may muse, may have all these splendorous ideas, but has not yet decided what to cast into manifestation. But when it begins to throw ideas into form, it is putting into plastic shape a concerted whole, a harmonious chord, boom, is being played on its divine piano. And all this comes into an order, because it restricts itself. It says, this shall be the way I will do it. And in this, our particular case, I will conceal myself in matter, and all my powers shall rise out of it, just as the lotus rises out of the mud. Whatever order there may be in it must be a sort of unfixed, unbinding order, such as supermind might evolve before it had proceeded to the work of fixed development, measurement, and interaction of relations. For that measurement and interaction, mind is necessary, though it need not be aware of itself as anything but a subordinate action of supermind, nor develop the interaction of relations on the basis of a self-imprisoned egoism, such as we see active in terrestrial nature. And this kind of limited but large awareness, you could say, is characteristic of the cosmic gods, of those Vedic deities which are described in the Upanishads, could not recognize Brahman when it manifested before them, could not understand it, and it disappeared. It exceeded all their grasp, all their powers. They could not conceive of it. Indra, approaching, found that it vanished. And then, in the high, vast mountain range, he saw the great goddess, she who brings all into manifestation, and said, "Who was that mighty spirit?" "That is the truth. It is through that that you have conquered." In other words, you didn't do it yourself. It is this power that has been lent to you, that is manifesting through you, that is the real doer, the real agency, and you must understand your place. Mind, once existent, life and form of substance follow. For life is simply the determination of force and action, of relation and interaction of energy from many fixed centers of consciousness. Fixed, not necessarily in place or time, but in a persistent coexistence of beings or soul forms of the eternal, supporting a cosmic harmony. That life may be very different from life as we know or conceive it, but essentially it would be the same principle at work which we see here figured as vitality, the principle to which the ancient Indian thinkers gave the name of vayu or prana, the life stuff, the substantial will and energy in the cosmos working out into determined form and action and conscious dynamis of being. So that is what prana is meant to do. Empower, fashion, form, enforce, in the literal sense of the word. So it takes the many standpoints which mind establishes and conceives and gives them proper force and energy to achieve their objective. He continues, substance too might be very different from our view and sense of material body, much more subtle, much less rigidly binding in its law of self-division and mutual resistance, and body or form might be an instrument and not a prison, yet for the cosmic interaction, some determination of form and substance would always be necessary, even if it be only a mental body or something yet more luminous, subtle, and puissantly and freely responsive than the freest mental body. So all these three principles, mind, life, and matter, may, in their essence and how they're conceived, be different from the way that we experience them. They may have more refined and subtle powers, which we can come to know. Now we know them only in their coarse forms. As we evolve, we may discover interiorly what other capacities, what other brilliances are embedded in them. It follows that wherever cosmos is, there, even if only one principle be initially apparent, even if at first that seemed to be the sole principle of things, and everything else that may appear afterwards in the world seem to be no more than its forms and results, and not in themselves indispensable to cosmic existence, such a front presented by being can only be an illusory mask or appearance of its real truth. Translate, in other words, don't mistake the material husk of our being as being all that there is, and life is simply a form of liberated matter and mind just a brilliant form of the same, again, material. Other realities are there. Where one principle is manifest in cosmos, there all the rest must be not merely present and passively latent, but secretly at work. So wherever we turn our gaze, remember, if there's a sevenfold cord of being, and the soul representing the eighth, the principle of bliss, wanders and grows through these worlds, then on each of those worlds, all seven are present. Satchit Ananda, the supermind, matter, life, and mind, all present, nascently, embedded, encoded in each. And they must be at work. They must be serving the higher purpose of the divine at that station. Of course, we're fixed here in the body. We're evolving through material form. So we come to experience all the seven here through this. But they are experienceable, discoverable on all seven planes. All seven are on all seven planes. In any given world, its scale and harmony of being may be openly in possession of all seven at a higher or lower degree of activity. In another, they may be all involved in one, which becomes the initial or fundamental principle of evolution in that world, but evolution of the involved there must be. So, in our world, we take matter as the basis and we must evolve through it. There may be harmonic interplay on other ranges, in other planes of existence, where they, in a sense, get along better and are not concealed, hidden away, but get to act openly in the way that is native to them. Here we have to, in a sense, win the right by evolving out of the obscurity of matter and liberate each of these powers of being. So how the principles develop depends on the plane concerned. Which plane are we talking about? The material? The life plane? The mental plane? The supramental plane? Back in the triplicity of Satchit Ananda? The evolution of the sevenfold power of being, the realization of its septuple name, must be the destiny of any world which starts apparently from the involution of all in one power. And he has a note, which he has added in his revision of this chapter. In any given world, there need not be an involution, but only a subordination of the other principles to one or their inclusion in one. Then evolution is not a necessity of that world order. So on higher planes of being, for instance, there can be a subordination of all the other principles to the ordering principle of that plane. For instance, on the life plane, all other powers of being may consent to be directed by the life plane. Same would hold for the plane of mind. So there is not necessarily an evolution on those planes. It is not necessary. On our plane, in the material universe, it is. He continues, therefore, well, before we go, let us say that this is something that Sri Aurobindo may have included here to include resonance from the mother and her experience of these inner planes of the cosmos, that they are static in order, that they do not evolve in themselves. That is in itself an interesting postulate. Because there is a great war among philosophers as to whether the world that we experience, the cosmos we experience, can indeed evolve, or whether it is like a layer cake of worlds which are static and cannot evolve. And Sri Aurobindo here, looking more deeply into what is the actual functioning of the principles of being, describes that here in our physical cosmos, evolution is the order of the day, you might say, of the cosmic day. But on other planes of being, there is no necessity of evolution because other powers consort with the dominant power of said plane to order that world. That principle of being is therefore static. So the beings who are native to the pranic plane need not evolve. They can assume forms, they can establish their own world in the hierarchy of worlds and maintain their law without being influenced by evolution. Same is true of mind, etc., etc. And within every plane, of course, there are many worlds. This was the substance of Mother's experience, and it would not be surprising if Sri Aurobindo included this as a footnote to incorporate that worldview into this. Therefore, he writes, the material universe was bound in the nature of things to evolve from its hidden life, apparent life, from its hidden mind, apparent mind. And it must, in the same nature of things, evolve from its hidden supermind, apparent supermind, and from the concealed spirit within it, the triune glory of Satchit-Ananda. The only question is whether the earth is to be a scene of that emergence, or the human creation on this or any other material scene, in this or any other cycle of the large wheelings of time, its instrument and vehicle. The ancient seers believed in this possibility for man and held it to be his divine destiny. The modern thinker does not even conceive of it, or if he conceived, would deny or doubt. If he sees a vision of the supermind, If he sees a vision of the superman, it is in the figure of increased degrees of mentality or vitality. He admits no other emergence, sees nothing beyond these principles, for these have traced for us up till now our limit and circle. So, will Earth be the scene? Humanity the means? The modern thinker who has touched upon the notion of an overman or a superman is, of course, Friedrich Nietzsche. In this progressive world, with this human creature in whom the divine spark has been kindled, real wisdom is likely to dwell with the higher aspiration rather than with the denial of aspiration, or with the hope that limits and circumscribes itself within those narrow walls of apparent possibility which are our only intermediate house of training. In the spiritual order of things, the higher we project our view and our aspiration, the greater the truth that seeks to descend upon us, because it is already there within us and calls for its release from the covering that conceals it in manifested nature. The divine spark. There are only half a dozen occurrences in the life divine of his use of the term spark, which of course we've seen in the Mundaka Upanishad, that central fire that casts out millions and millions of sparks. Each spark represents that principle of bliss emerging from that into active manifestation in this cosmos. Seems to go into darkness, but that spark cannot be extinguished. That is you. And that spark arrives in this dense, dark universe and evolves back to rejoin that central fire but without leaving the world. Rather, by illumining the world, causes those spheres, the divine above and the material here, to merge, marries spirit and cosmos, spirit and matter. Again, the idea of a divine spark is present in the Lurianic Kabbalah, which the mother studied with Max Thion. And some of the power of these sentences and the idea that comes again and again through the life divine about this spark which characterizes the soul in development owes its presence in the life divine to the mother and her vision. So, the sevenfold cord of being, Sat is here in matter, Chit is here in life, the bliss is here in our soul, and the supermind is here, really here, at the center of our mentality. All the seven principles of being are present here for the soul to experience and evolve with and through. So this chapter is the last in the unbroken sequence since Sri Aurobindo began publishing these in the Arya. Next, we come upon a chapter called Supermind, Mind and the Overmind Maya, which is an addition. He has added it to the series. It will likely take us a month of sessions to cover that chapter. And then we will enter the second book, the first part of which is, as I say, a month away. Tonight, though, we have looked at the sevenfold cord of being, and I think we can continue in our reading from Savitri. From that same passage we have been in now for the last few weeks. This again is from Book 2, the book of the Traveler of the Worlds, The World Stair. This faint and fluid sketch of soul called man shall stand out on the background of long time, a glowing epitome of eternity. A little point reveal the infinitudes. A mystery's process is the universe. At first was laid a strange, anomalous base, a void, a cipher of some secret hole, where zero held infinity in its sum, and all and nothing were a single term, an eternal negative, a matrix naught. Into its forms the child is ever born, who lives forever in the vasts of God. A slow reversal's movement then took place, a gas belched out from some invisible fire. Of its dense rings were formed these million stars. Upon Earth's newborn soil God's tread was heard. Across the thick smoke of Earth's ignorance, a mind began to see and look at forms and groped for knowledge in the nescient night. Caught in a blind stone grip, force worked its plan and made in sleep this huge mechanical world, that matter might grow conscious of its soul, and like a busy midwife, the life power deliver the zero carrier of the all. Because eternal eyes turned on Earth's gulfs, the lucent clarity of a pure regard, and saw a shadow of the unknowable mirrored in the inconscient's boundless sleep, creation's search for self began its stir. A spirit dreamed in the crude cosmic whirl. Mind flowed unknowing in the sap of life, and matter's breasts suckled the divine idea. A miracle of the absolute was born. Infinity put on a finite soul. All ocean lived within a wandering drop. A time-made body housed the illimitable. To live this mystery out, our souls came here. Jai Ma, Namaste.